Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Around this time yesterday morning, an avalanche struck at Palisades Tahoe Ski Resort outside Truckee on the opening day for a Black Diamond ski lift reserved for expert skiers and snowboarders. One man, identified as 66-year-old Kenneth Kidd, was killed. Three others were injured or caught in the slide. The Sierra Avalanche Center forecasted a considerable possibility of avalanches in the area due to a winter storm with intense snowfall and high winds. But officials at the ski resort said safety crews checked the area over the past several days, doing control work and monitoring the conditions for the opening. To help us make sense of the situation, we have two guests this morning. Andrew Schwartz is the lead scientist at UC Berkeley's Central Sierra Snow Lab, located at Donner Summit, and he's going to explain the conditions in Tahoe. But first, we're going to begin with Brian Hickey. Brian is a longtime reporter at KCRA. He was also born and raised near Tahoe and is a lifelong backcountry adventurer who is very familiar with the conditions and terrain in the Sierra. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for making the time.
Good morning, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
So first off, when I was reading the press release, I mean, it's kind of hard to visualize what the terrain looks like. Can you describe the terrain where the slide occurred?
So from the reports, this is an area called GS Bowl. So as you're going up KT-22, it would be just to the looker's left. If you're on the chairlift, you'd get off the chairlift, you'd hang a left, and then you would drop in. And it sounds like this was triggered right somewhere near the top of GS Bowl. And then the runout carried it all the way out onto the flats. Because if you've seen some of the video of the rescue efforts, there it is pretty, I wouldn't say totally flat terrain, but generally flat compared to where it appears this slide was triggered higher up the mountain. And so it is steep terrain. It's iconic Palisades Tahoe terrain. It's legendary. KT-22 is the lift that if you've ever seen the pictures of people lined up on a powder day, everyone gets there sometimes before the sun comes up to get the coveted first tracks off of KT-22.
So I would imagine you have skied KT-22 before.
Many times. And there was a lot of pent up demand for this lift, as yesterday was the first day of the season for KT-22 to be open. So there was a large celebration going on at the bottom, people excited to get up there, and almost immediately is when this slide was triggered.
Yeah, so on the one hand, for expert skiers and snowboarders like yourself, I mean, this terrain is something, as you mentioned, there's a lot of pent-up demand, but I would also imagine that that also comes with some risks that you mitigate as a skier like yourself. Is it unusual for an avalanche to occur in this area?
I mean, if you look at the numbers, no, this would be considered avalanche terrain. But that is why Palisades Tahoe Ski Patrol goes out and does the monumental efforts that they do every day that we get new snow or even wind transported snow. They will be out there either ski checking it, cutting it, going side to side, trying to trigger an avalanche with just their body weight, or they'll go out there with hand charges, explosives. They also have areas where on the mountain there are remotely detonated. They're called GazX machines that shoot a charge of propane into the snowpack to trigger avalanches in those known paths. So yes, this would be avalanche terrain, but being in bounds, it is controlled terrain, but the control only goes so far as we saw yesterday. Back when I worked in Reno, this was 20 years ago, I'm aging myself a little bit, I had an opportunity to go out with the ski patrol at then Squaw Valley and go out and work the Red Dog Ridge. And so we got on the lift before the sun was even up. It was bitter cold. I was riding up the chairlift with guys who had backpacks full of explosives. And we were trudging through knee-deep snow as they went out there. And this is what they do every day when there's new snow or wind-transported snow.
Hmm. You know, obviously we're familiar with an avalanche, but we might not know the specifics or the nuances of it. I mean, how is an avalanche forecast created? What happens when an avalanche actually takes place?
So they typically occur between 30 and 45 degrees. So if you're a backcountry skier, as I am, that's when you get onto something greater than 30 degrees, you kind of, the hair stands up on your neck a little bit and you're going to take some extra precautions. Either you're going to dig a pit and do what's called a shovel shear test. You're testing the stability of the snow. You're looking for weak layers. And, you know, and beyond that, you're also just kind of studying the terrain. Are you seeing any signs of naturally triggered slides that had already occurred in your area? What was the wind the night before? Things like that. And then, of course, you bring along your safety equipment. I would never go into the backcountry without my beacon, which is an electronic device that allows my partner to find me. A partner is my other key piece of equipment that I would take with me. And then also a shovel and then a probe. If you saw some of the video of yesterday's rescue effort, you saw people with long sticks shoving them into the snow, literally hoping to jab a body to locate somebody.
Hmm. You mentioned the temperature range that makes an avalanche likely. I mean, does the amount of snow also matter, or even the type of snow?
All of that matters. So I kind of missed your question. I'm sorry about that. But you've got the angle, and then you've got the snow. And think of the snow as a layer cake. Every time a new storm comes in, there's going to be different conditions, whether it be the temperature, the snow to the liquid to snow ratio, which I know Andrew will talk about here in a moment. But that snow, they all have the formation. The crystals have different formations, and some bond better with others. Right now, according to the Sierra Avalanche Center, we have a persistent weak layer that formed early in this month. And that layer was formed by something called surface hoar, which is basically a frost that forms on the surface. That can easily go away, but if it doesn't and it gets buried by another layer of snow, that's a pretty loose, slippery layer. And I'll be curious to know in the after they investigate this slide whether or not that persistent weak layer was at the heart of this avalanche.
This also happened as a winter storm was forecasted in the area. I mean, given that you are very familiar with the area, I mean, is it unusual to go skiing during conditions like this?
These are my favorite days. You know, there's usually less people on the mountain. We call it free refills. You go ski a powder run, you come back around, and on a good day, your tracks are gone already. They're already buried by the next run. And so we call that free refills. But again, you take that with a certain level of inherent risk. I generally don't ski with my probe and my shovel inbounds on a powder day, but I have a beacon and I always bring my beacon on a big powder day. Why not? It's about the size of an old Sony Walkman, and you strap it to your chest. You hardly know it's there. And, you know, it would just help somebody locate me if something were to happen, even inbounds. And an inbound slide doesn't have to be a big avalanche. It can be something like a little slough that happens in a gully that maybe patrol didn't get to. It could be something as big as 20 feet long, just enough to throw you off balance and throw you upside down into a tree well, or maybe knock you off balance and throw you off of or into a rock. In many cases, an avalanche is trauma is the cause of death because people are thrown into something of a hazard. And then, of course, there's always the asphyxiation that could happen as well. But trauma is one of the big causes of fatalities.
Have you ever experienced one?
I've been caught in a slide inbounds. This was years ago in Kirkwood, a run called Big Sister. For those of you that know it, it's up off of the wall. You hike across the cliff there. And my buddies and I all raced out to Big Sister, and I was the first to drop in. And what was interesting about this is once I looked up, after studying the slide afterwards, the crown was only about 4 inches. But the whole bowl slid and went down into a funnel. So by the time that 4 inches of snow was funneled, I was shoulder deep in snow, but was lucky enough to have my torso, shoulders, and head up out of snow. But I, at that point, breathed in so much snow, I was choking and coughing. Could have been a lot worse, but it just shows that even a small amount of snow, given the proper terrain, can funnel into something very deep.
You've said inbounds a few times. That means within a ski resort, right?
Within a ski resort, yeah.
As opposed to the backcountry.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the backcountry, you know, a number of small sloughs and things like that. Nothing major, fortunately, knock on wood.
You also mentioned that this lift, KT-22, is like in high demand for expert skiers. You also said that it was kind of unusual that it opened this late in the season. Why is that?
Well, typically we'd have a little more snow. I don't know what the snow totals are right now. Just before New Year's, I think we were sitting around 29%. Perhaps Andrew can elaborate on that, but we're still well below normal. So typically KT would be open a little bit sooner than this. And, you know, honestly, putting people on the mountain actually helps stabilize the mountain. And when you've got a bunch of people skiing, you are constantly ski cutting and compacting that snowpack. And so, again, that also could be a factor here in that you have these different layers that form from these small systems that came through. And then that persistent weak layer, you know, I'm not second guessing any of the decisions that were made at Palisades, but these are just some of the factors that I know exist in the Sierra right now.
I mean, I'm going back to when you experienced a slide. You were the first one to go down. And then yesterday was the opening day of this lift. And so does that create a risk being like the first? I mean, is it better to kind of, I don't know, wait it out? I mean, I understand someone has to be the first, but does a safety change, you know, the longer you wait?
I have never been the first one on the lift and felt bad about that. In fact, that is a privilege to be the first one on a lift and get first tracks. But you do have to keep in mind the inherent risk that you're taking upon yourself. You know, again, the patrol can only do so much and they do a very good job of it. But at the same time, you need to have a buddy and you need to have a plan because sometimes things can go sideways, whether it be the conditions or your own ability.
Finally, Brian, I mean, if you're caught in an avalanche, what kind of steps or actions should people take in the immediacy in the first few seconds?
One thing you'll notice if you study ski patrol, none of them have straps on their poles. And there's a reason for that. And on powder days, I don't ski with my straps. I just hold them under my hands. And the reason being, if you were to be caught in a slide, you can easily jettison your poles and free your hands up and then start doing a swimming motion. You can sometimes kick your skis off, free yourself up so that you can literally swim or try to swim to the top of the snowpack before it sets, before it comes to rest. That'll get you closer to the surface, if anything, hopefully to the surface. And then, you know, again, having the proper equipment. I don't ski in bounds with all of my Abbey gear, but I do ski again with the beacon. And so if I'm with a buddy with a beacon, you know, I can find them. But I would say skiing without your poles, knowing your own ability. I think a far greater risk than avalanche in the resort is tree well entrapment, especially for snowboarders. If you end upside down in a tree well, and there's videos that have been done with expert professionals, expert patrol, one that comes to mind out of Canada recently, where an expert patrolman tried to dig himself out of a tree well upside down and he couldn't do it. And the effort it took to dig him out was incredible. So that is a far greater risk than an avalanche, in my opinion.
We know that avalanches are common, but just given your expertise specifically in this area, when you hear that one happened and that one, you know, took a life, how do you feel? What do you think?
Well, it reminds us that the mountains are in control despite our best efforts to mitigate those risks. I think that anyone who loves skiing and snowboarding, the risk is part of the excitement, at least for me. I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie, so... And just that thrill of adventure, that's what the mountains provide us. So, you know, I don't want it to be a completely controlled environment, but, you know, again, the resorts do a great job of maintaining it and making it safe. And I can only imagine those patrollers this morning are second guessing what they did or what they didn't do. And, you know, wondering if there was something more they could do, because I've been with them, as I told you earlier, I've seen the work that they do. It is painstaking. It's bitter cold out there. It's dangerous work that they do. And they do that daily to try to mitigate that hazard for the rest of us. So I can only imagine how they must feel this morning, given the tragedy that happened yesterday.
Brian, thank you so much.
Sure.
Brian Hickey is an expert skier and outdoor adventurer in the Sierra. You can actually watch Brian on KCRA3 as their morning traffic reporter. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we've been discussing the conditions surrounding yesterday morning's deadly avalanche at Palisades Tahoe Resort. Now we're going to welcome Andrew Schwartz from the Central Sierra Snow Lab near Donner Summit. Hey, Andrew.
Good morning, Vicki. How are you doing?
So you joined us about... I'm doing great. Thank you. You joined us about a month ago, and I think a lot has changed since then. Over the past, like, 48 hours or so, you know, what have conditions been like for you?
Well, it started off relatively tame about 2 days ago. We had a little bit of snowfall. Temperatures were starting to fall. But over the last 24 hours is where it really ramped up. About this time yesterday, we were starting to get heavier snowfall rates. Wind speeds were really starting to peak. We were seeing a lot of very high wind speeds blowing snow around. And over the last 24 hours, we've had about 10 inches of snow here at the lab, about 13 inches total over the last 2 days. So it's been a snowy one for sure.
Hmm. When you mentioned, you know, just in the last 24 hours, I mean, 24 hours ago is when that avalanche took place. Can you take us back to what the Tahoe area was experiencing, you know, at this time, weather-wise?
Absolutely. At this time, we actually had some of our heavier snowfall rates starting to move into the area from north of I-80, basically. They were finally starting to move this way. We were starting to see our rates pick up. And at the same time, we were starting to get, we were peaking with our winds. And those winds were kind of coming from a northerly, northwesterly area. So they were basically going out to the east. And when we talk about the Sierra, the reason why we have kind of, you know, drier areas on the east side is because we have that rain shadow. Because when that wind pushes the snow into the top of the peaks, it tends to fall on the west side, and then the dry east side stays dry. So as this is occurring, we were getting a lot of blowing snow up and over the ridges, a lot of very strong winds, which can do things like wind load our snow, which can be potential avalanche factors as well. So it was very, very stormy, very windy, and kind of difficult conditions to be out in.
So basically the eastern slope of the Sierra can be more prone to avalanches if the conditions are right, when you're setting up the wind and also the snow?
If the conditions are right, yeah. So it depends a lot on wind direction. But yeah, we see oftentimes we get like I said, wind loading. So that's basically where wind will deposit a lot of snow in one area, typically over a ridge or on opposite side of trees or things like that. So it doesn't always necessarily have to happen on the east side, but in these conditions, that's probably where it was highest. Mm.
In addition to avalanches and just there's limited visibility over the summit on I-80, what other dangers have built up or can build up, you know, when storms like this take place?
In addition to what you mentioned, kind of just travel and being out in avalanche style conditions, the big thing here with recent storms has been our wind chills. When we talk about these very strong winds and the fact that these last couple storms have been colder than average, we can see wind chills that might be around zero or even below zero on some of these ridges and crests, where it can only take, you know, a few minutes for frostbite to form on exposed skin. So that's one of the issues. But of course, the big thing is when you're out trying to travel in these conditions, whether that be on foot or in your car, you know, there's a reason the National Weather Service typically tells you to stay home when we're expecting these big storms, because if you end up getting yourself stuck in any way or getting into a problematic situation, it becomes much more dire if you're not well equipped with things like blankets and warm clothing and the emergency necessities.
Yeah, I have been in whiteout conditions, as I know Brian Hickey has as well. So we understand that and relay that as well. You know, given that you joined us in December, it was kind of lackluster at that time. I mean, the snowpack was only around a third of average. I mean, it wasn't obviously set in stone yet. A lot can happen. Now, several weeks, storms later, where do things stand today?
Well, we're sitting better. I don't want to, you know, just keep harping on doom, doom, doom as far as our snowpack. We are doing better. Since the first of the year, we've seen our snowpack over double compared to what it was. And that's fantastic news. Right now at the snow lab, we're at 53% of our average snow water equivalent, which is up from about 30%. Statewide, we're at 37% of average. So we are better. One of the problems, though, is that we started the year so dry that the storms that are coming in are just kind of keeping us roughly where we're at. So if we're talking 40 to 50% of average, these storms are kind of just keeping us in that area. They're not really pulling us out and getting us closer to average at all. We really need something with 3, 4, 5 feet, you know, or back-to-back big storms to really start making up for that lack of snow that we had early in the season. So have we been getting snow? Yes. And that's a great thing, because we're not becoming even more dry by not getting it, but we're not necessarily making up ground either.
You mentioned in December that these colder systems in terms of snowfall were really kind of heading more north, like Northern California to the Pacific Northwest. Is that still the case?
That is, yeah. So we see the most of most of our snowfall occur in the northern part of the state, and that's being reflected in our snowpack too. So for instance, in the northern Sierra and up to the Oregon border, we're about 40% of our average snowpack to date. Here in the central Sierra, we're about 38%, and down south they're hurting a lot more than we are. They're 29%. So those storm systems are going further up north right now. We are catching the southern edge of them, and we've been seeing a little bit more than we did earlier in the season. But so far, yeah, we're not sitting directly in the line of fire like we were last year when we were at 223% of average for this date.
Andrew, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Andrew Schwartz is a lead scientist at UC Berkeley's Central Sierra Snow Lab. It is located at Donner Summit, updating us on the recent winter storm in Tahoe. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.